CliffCentral.com.
Alrighty, it is Tuesday morning. It's the 17th of May. We've got Le Bang and we've got Bagabantu and we've got me and we've got you. And hopefully a start to a good and productive and busy day today. There's lots to do and we've got to work. We got to work because they say the petrol price is going to go up again in June. And not just by a little, but by a lot. You know what I think we're going to have to do? We're going to have to find ways to squash all of our stuff into 1 or 2 days of the week, and then you don't drive the rest of the week. That's what we're going to have to do, right?
Like we need petrol public holidays where we don't spend petrol on anything. You just stay at home and work from home.
Correct.
Yeah, maybe that's a new pandemic, the petrol price. Can we have a stay of home order for that? State of nation disaster, anyone?
I'm not looking for any new pandemics, if you ask me. I'd prefer if we didn't, if we didn't try and, that's almost like looking for trouble, you know? No, I know what we need. Let's find a new pandemic. It's going to be exciting. Oh, man. All right, we got lots of things to get to. So, Bakabantu, a couple of these stories that I know you're interested in, and NFTs, I've never really understood. I said this in the beginning. We had two guys on who were experts on Collectomania the one day, and this crypto crash has pretty much gutted the NFT market. Right? Are you happy about that? Because you never believed in them either, right?
I hated NFTs. All of them were ugly. Also, I didn't understand the concept. You're selling me a picture. Well, okay, you're selling me the license to a picture that I can just download on Google.
Right.
So, but that's besides the point. I just thought, and then even when you look under the hood, I'm no Sean Saunders or anything, but when you look under the hood, like, are they bad for the environment in terms of the amount of, like, to create one in terms of the blockchain and the whatnot and the whatnot, just bad carbon emissions and what. But when you look at the actual thing that you're getting, Gareth, it's terrible. There was this one, the Jack Dorsey's tweet got sold for something like in the millions.
Mm.
And when the guy who bought it tried to auction off earlier this year, I think he got $14,000.
So
he bought it in the millions.
He bought it for millions, sold it for $14,000. So clearly a very good deal.
And it's an auction, Gareth. So I'm like, wait, why don't you have an open price that's higher than that? Clearly no one was buying at like million mark. And you were like, well, I'll take anything.
I hate to say I told you so, but the moment Paris Hilton became an expert in this, the moment Paris Hilton was running around saying, I'm buying NFTs, I was like, okay, well, that's going to be a disaster. You know, What's that?
Yeah, apparently there was a low-key scam in terms of like in the NFT market. Again, all rumors that I hear, because I'm not a financial expert, even though I did study accounting for those 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I digress. What do you call this thing? Apparently, like there's a feedback loop that they've been manipulating the people with NFTs. So I bought it for $1 million. And then to jack up the price in order to value it for $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
So then when I sell it again, I say it's $2 million because I bought it at $1 million and increased in value.
So that's
what's crashing.
It's a kind of inflation as well. It's just bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. So it was bullshit. And now people are realizing it's bullshit. That's why they're not worth the paper they printed on.
Well, Mo Rabbit says, I think this is a good way of looking at it. NFTs are like having a marriage certificate, but everyone is sleeping with your spouse.
You're literally buying a coat to a picture that exists everywhere in the world.
Right.
You can't even
see what happens when you've got too much money. I feel like there should be a limit of how much money a person can have. Because it seems like when you've just got too much and you don't know what to do with it anymore and you've done everything on your bucket list, you've traveled the whole world, you just start getting bored. And then you say, what can I do with this $8 million today?
It is amazing. Like there are people who have like more money than God, you know, like people who are hundreds of billions on the world scale, but they're not the ones buying the NFTs.
Buying the NFTs. Exactly. That's what's weird.
So those people are clever enough to not be spending their money on it. It's these people in the middle who've made quite a lot of money, but they're just lucked out, you know, and you can tell like there are a lot of people. I met some people who are, They've done well. They've made a lot of money in life. Maybe they don't even worry about money anymore. But they're not even that brilliant. Not everybody, you know, money is just one way you can measure whether someone's smart or not. And a lot of people who've made money are actually quite dumb. They're just lucky. Certainly, it's not true that wherever money goes, it's to clever people. That's not true. We all know people who are very bad, who are very stupid. They still got lots of cash. And we all know very hardworking, very honest people who are also extremely clever who just have never had any luck. And money just doesn't seem to flow their way. So I don't think – like NFTs, and I'm with you, Bakabantu, every step of the way on this one. I've never understood this. I didn't claim to. I was never even tempted to get involved in that stuff, and maybe I've missed out. And if one day it turns out that was a great investment, I'll be the first one to say, oh, well, I didn't see it.
I'll take that loss with a smile, guys. Yeah, and I am not invested in NFTs.
And to be honest, like, who has money to invest in that stuff now? Who? Show me those people, because they there's very, very few of them. Can't be a lot. All right, so while we're talking about these NFTs, apparently Madonna, she put out some kind of NFT. I mean, she's always trying to be on, on trend. Yeah. She's always trying to be on trend. So apparently she put out a 3D NFT model of her vagina with a – yeah, I know. Just hold that thought for a second. I know it's a very disturbing thought, but just hold it for a second. So what it is an NFT model of her vagina with a tree that's growing out of it. So it's a tree grown in Madonna's vagina, which she imagines people would want to buy?
Yep.
It's not bad, actually.
She titled it Mother. It's not as explicit as it sounds, but Mother of Creation. And I'm like, oh, Madonna, stop. Have you seen her TikTok with just a face, just like in your face? And she's like, oh, Madonna. And she looks drunk. She looks like she's going through the most. But like the NFT itself is not bad. But again, I don't understand why I would be buying that.
There's no way I would be buying this, but Madonna, you know what? She definitely likes to push the boundaries. She likes to seem like she's very trendy and knows what's going on. Maybe she does. Maybe she doesn't. I wish her luck. If somebody buys this, be it on your own head. I mean, I can show you a version of what it looks like in 2D. I can't show you the 3D because you would have to buy that from Madonna for millions of dollars, I suppose. But here it is. That's what it looks like. It's a very much younger Madonna, let's just say. And then there's this tree that's growing out of her vagina, which is terrifically exciting. Well done to her. Do you also get the feeling like she's really trying hard to stay relevant? It bothers her that at some point someone's going to say...
She was trying hard when she kissed Britney Spears on that stage. She was trying hard back then.
Wow, and you remember that? If you remember that, Bakabantu, then you are one of us.
I don't remember that. The internet told me that.
I don't know.
I think we need to go on like a Madonna like break, because she's doing all these really wild things in the media, and as you said, like she's really seemingly trying her best to stay relevant or on trend or whatever. It's just coming across as a little bit like desperate. I think let's just give Madonna a break. Let's talk about her again like in September, please. I'm just
good deal. I'm happy to accept. Please. Thank you. I accept. All right. Please. So
thank you.
So let's talk about something else that's been going on and which people don't want to talk about, but it is something worth reflecting on. Stellenbosch University again in the news for like race issues. So what do you think is going on there?
It's what you're saying. They're once again just in the news for race issues. Another year comes by and the people of Stellenbosch are just showing who they really are. It's literally in the DNA of Stellenbosch University at this stage. It almost just seems like nothing gets done about it. But while the student did get suspended,
so what actually
people
happened?
Are calling for
do we know what happened?
So this young man was drunk with his friends. And they decided to break into the res room of a young black student, and they decided to piss all over the property. And they were just like, oh, we were just drunk. You know, this is what we do. It's initiation. All sorts of bollocks excuses. So yesterday, what was interesting is to see the amount of Stellenbosch University students that actually were gathered and really were just like, yo, enough is enough. It was tons of them, majority of them were first year students. They were just like, yo, dude, this cannot happen. Mm. Like, it's not even a case of, oh no, it's initiation. No, this is just, it's disgusting. You don't even do this to your white counterparts. It is literally borderline. It's just nonsense at this stage. So, yeah, that resulted in the kid getting suspended. But like, where are you taught something like that? Because this is also on the back of like, you know, completely different story. But in America, where, you know, that guy just went to, was it Buffalo, and just killed a bunch of black people.
Yeah, I mean,
this is lit. So, and in the same weekend, there was another, I think, a 10-year-old little white boy who went to his neighbor's house with a whip and just started banging on the door with the whip, looking for their daughter, their black daughter. So I'm just like, I'm at this point where I'm like, what's happening in the spiritual world right now, where we're just being exposed to all this bullshit that is just happening, and we're just allowing the consequences of this bullshit? It just seems like, stop it, guys. You're suspended. You can't behave. Where are you guys taught this shit? Like,
why would anybody? I mean, first of all, I thought that initiation, this was a thing that they don't do anymore. I mean, I thought this is something we all had to give up and move on from. It was like some childish remnant from like the public school system where, you know, people are taught to be humble in their first year at high school. I didn't know that this stuff was still going on, and I certainly didn't take part in any of it, because when I was at university, first of all, I didn't go to I wasn't a resident. I was a day student, so I didn't really know about this. But I thought this was long ago. This is still going on? I mean, it's unbelievable. And if they're doing this kind of stupid shit to each other, I mean, to me, the level of stupid, childish disrespect that's being shown here is just unbelievable. And the fact that, you know, we always seem to make excuses for drunk people, but I reckon if you're a horrible person sober, you'll be a horrible person drunk. It's just, it just magnifies you. So that's no excuse. And I also think that like race stuff is just so absolutely electric at the moment that everybody wants to make everything racial, but there are real racial things going on. And sometimes those get pushed to the side because it's become like the story of stories, right? So if you can find a racial element to a story, then suddenly it's in the news. Otherwise, it doesn't really get the attention it deserves. So I wonder how much of this is, first of all, the university ducking and diving because they're just terrified of the controversy around race, and maybe they should wake up to that.
Yet again.
Yeah, and that's a big part of it. But I also wonder how many people just hop on these bandwagons. And I don't think there's a relationship, really, Lebang, between this insane man who went in and shot all those people in Buffalo, New York. I mean, I don't think he's in any way related to a bunch of students pissing into a dorm. But I do think that the victims in both cases believe that there is some kind of overwhelming, overarching racial thing going on in the world. And I'm not going to argue with them. That's how they feel, right?
Mm. Yeah, so it's definitely two different stories. What I'm trying to do is like pinpoint the patterns and like the similarities in all these three isolated incidents which happened over the past 4 days, which all at the end of the day, whether you want to say it with your mouth or not, is it's racism, guys. It's racism. It's almost like being black is like a sin. Like, what did we do, you know? To and not every white person is racist, sure, but when I look at these stories, I'm like, these are literally black people minding their business. They're not even bothering you. They're not breathing the same air as you. They've done nothing to this person at Rez was probably just sleeping. And then boo, 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 somebody comes in and decides, I'm gonna take a piss on your shit because you ain't shit. It's ultimately what you're saying to me. And that's what I want to, that's what the point that I'm getting to, in the same way that this incident in the States, where this 10-year-old boy took a whip and decided to go and just bang on this door looking for this black child. Where are you taught that behavior? Like, that's not the kind of thing where you're like, oh, you know what? I'm 10 years old. I'm so smart. I know exactly how to deal with this shit. That's what I'm speaking to. I'm speaking to, yes, you're right in that some of it is just, you know, sure, people just want to be a part of things. Or what, but at the core this is, we cannot, we can't turn a blind eye.
No, we can't. But I mean, for the 10-year-old, it's an easy solution. You find out what those parents are like. And you figure out what the hell's going on there. But I mean, you can't hold a 10-year-old responsible for anything because they're 10. And 10-year-olds don't really think things through. They sometimes just do dumb shit. As for the other two, apparently they've arrested that guy in Buffalo, and he is in custody. And we'll find out what's going on in his crazy sick head. And hopefully it'll help give us some insight into where this kind of thing starts and where we can maybe do something.
Lucky him. Lucky him. He got arrested. You know, that's most people don't even get arrested. Don't they shoot you like boom right there and then?
But most of them shoot themselves. So what I'm saying is that we can actually, we can now get into this guy's head. Hopefully we can actually find out what drives people like that. Because I always hate the situation where these people go into a place and we have it in this country all the time where often police officers who are under enormous pressure go home, they kill their whole family and then they kill themselves. And we never figure out okay, well, maybe if we'd done this or if we discovered what it was that was driving them and where they made the decision, then maybe we could do something about it. But in this case, I mean, listen, I have no sympathy for this dude, obviously. In some ways, I would have preferred if he was also dead and they did shoot him. But there is an opportunity here to perhaps learn
to study the crazy.
Yeah, and we need to study
to figure out the patterns because the FBI does this kind of stuff where they look at your trends, they look at the stuff you follow, and all of this. We can figure out a pattern where we can stop this. Like to your point, Lebang, wow, where are these people learning this? So then, with a person like that in custody, we can try and work our way back to where did this radical mentality come from. But in terms of the Stellenbosch thing, Gareth, I don't think it's racial. I think it's just kids being kids. I went to varsity in 2015. We had initiation for that first year. We were radicalized in all types of thinking, man. It was almost like brainwashy, but it was not bad, like pissing in people's things. But freshmen.
Were you guys pissing on each other for jokes?
Yeah, like we were like soldiers, though. Like we're like freshmen. Like we woke up at 5. Our senior would call us on the quad. Freshmen, we'd be out there, like 120 strong. We'd be booing people. We'd be like, yeah, like we, like the one thing I know, we like our res was known for. We were even given a talk by the equality group or something like that on campus, where like they said some of our rhetoric was homophobic. So which was again, being a sound person, you realize, oh, okay, this is part of the fun, but this is why people are getting hurt. Mm. So then you learn to have fun without hurting people. So then that stuff gets curated. But with stuff like this, Stellenbosch does have a trend, but I think in this case, I don't think it's racial. I think this kid thought he could get away with it. He could have knocked on anyone's door and pissed, which is wrong. That's the wrong action. But I don't think he was like, I'm looking for a black kid.
Do you not believe this was not racial in any way?
I don't think he was looking for a black kid.
He just happened to go into that door and it just happened to be a black kid. He would have done it to any other kid.
Like Lebang, like I said, we were 120 first years, right? We had like maybe two white freshmen and we had two white housecom members. Like the math there just adds up. You're gonna knock.
Also,
if you're knocking on a freshman's door, you are gonna knock on a black student.
If it was a white guy in the room that got pissed on or whatever,
would it be a big story?
Would we even have heard of it? Would anyone have reported it? Because I don't think they would have, and no one would have even. I mean, that certainly that white kid wouldn't have, because who wants to hear that?
Yeah, but
there's a supply that has
a clear history of this kind of behavior. It's a very red flaggy thing. I mean, this is not the first time that Stellenbosch is in the news for this kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's like the 100th time, guys. You have to look at the track record. You're only as good as your last rodeo. We can't sit here and say,
there's a pattern, but again, there's also a pattern in how many black kids go to res. A lot of black kids go to res. I think it's malicious, but I don't think it's racially malicious. I don't think that kid was like, I'm going to look for a black kid. And like, I don't think the racism problem, especially in the youth,
the media,
is that big.
The media loves this stuff. I mean, because now we're talking about it, right? And it makes us all go, ooh, maybe it is a much bigger problem than it is. I mean, you go through the average South African, their day, and not even the tiniest minority of South Africans on their average day is encountering blatant homophobia, racism, Islamophobia, sexism, transphobia. No one is going out of their way to be those things because the cost of those things is so high First of all, why would you want to? Because it's just shitty. But second of all, the cost to you, to your life, to your work has become so high. Like if someone does or says something that's openly and blatantly racist these days, they're not going to survive on social media, right? And correctly so. They'll be held to account.
They're probably aren't on social media. Like,
exactly.
Anything.
This one girl who got kicked out, was it Miss Teen or Miss South Africa pageant for like tweets that she made when she was 17 that were misconstrued as racist. I'm like, I don't think in the youth, Lebang, I do think there is systematic racism and institutional racism, stuff that are like ingrained in our fabric. But I come from an Afrikaans town. There were stuff that were like, okay, this is legacy racism. But I don't think from my peers, like there was racism in that sense. Like Gareth is saying, like in blatant racism, like I'm going to look for a black boy and piss. I don't think there's people who are like, today I'm going to call you a cuff word.
So I think the incentive structure is a bit perverse because the media is so interested in these stories because it gets everybody fired up. And rightly so. I mean, people are sensitive about this because of the history of this country and frankly, in countries like America too, right? So there's an interest in it that outweighs the actual incidence of it. And, you know, there are a whole bunch of comments here about, well, you know, there was Waukesha and there were a whole lot of other things in America, which no one talks about because it was a black person who was doing that to white people. Doesn't get the same amount of coverage for all kinds of reasons. But I think the media is a big part of this. So I'm glad we're talking about this stuff. We need to talk about this stuff. It's important to address these things. But I don't think it's all cut and dried and obvious. I mean, some of it is just...
Definitely.
Some of it is just stuck.
I think it's bad behavior.
Yeah, and it's...
I think it's just bad behavior. The university should address it as bad behavior. I don't think it's racially motivated. I don't think we should be looking at...
Well, why don't we just... don't we ask the people who did it? Because they're the only ones who'll know.
I was about to say, I think like the best thing here is to the experience of the kids in those reses is probably completely different. I mean, obviously we're on the outside looking in. There's only so much we know, but I truly believe that. And there's probably tons of them who will most likely be willing to like join us on the show, or whatever. But just to, you know, understand what they experience, like in the same way that we say nobody goes out their way to really be racist and to
if we use those words racially motivated, then we need to actually understand the motives of the people who do those things and the chances of, first of all, they've got to be honest, which you don't always know you're going to get. Maybe they won't be honest, so we'll never know their motives. And you can't mind read. So we may ascribe to them that they are, you know, vicious racists, but we don't know that for a fact. That's the whole problem with this thing, is it's an unfalsifiable premise. Mm. So if you say to someone, well,
it's layered.
If I say, well, your motivation is because you don't like me because I'm tall or because I'm white or because I have blonde hair, I have to be able to prove that. And the fact is I can't. I can never prove that.
You can't disprove a negative.
Correct. It's unfalsifiable.
I watched my younger brother go to one of like the best schools in this country and get bullied to the absolute core just because of the color of his skin. So I guess I'm coming from a place of like, I can kind of, you know, I see this for what it truly is. And we can call it all sorts of things and say, oh no, but they were just this. To see it firsthand, you start to see that, okay, cool. We're just allowing people to do whatever the hell that they want. And then just coming up with excuses for it. And when you see it firsthand, it completely hits different.
Well,
so that's what I'm saying. Maybe the solution here, if we are that interested, is to perhaps, you know, see what the people in Stellenbosch have to say. See what the real students have to say. If for them, really, this was just, it could have been anyone, then for sure.
The media,
half of the kids are toy-toying the whole day.
But the media come along and they don't actually give us the report directly from the student who was the victim in this case or the students who were the aggressors in this case. We don't even hear those stories. They just put a narrative together for us and we're expected to accept it at face value because it sells newspapers or it gets clicks online. And it makes people like us on this show this morning talk about it. So they've won. The media. It's not really about, we don't even know the names or the identities of these people involved. We've been sold a story and we're just believing it. And unless we actually ask the people in it, like, how do you feel about this? What happened? Tell us how it goes. Then we're just speculating on something that we can't prove. It's ridiculous. Anyway,
he did post a video, but yeah, I think that's pocket. It's very, very late.
I think it's a good thing to talk about and we've got to talk about it some more. And I mean, listen, you also have to you have to bear in mind that these incidences do not occur all the time. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in the news. If they occurred every day and
they're not the norm,
it was the norm and people were just not getting along and there was massive, there was worse racism now than back in apartheid, then it wouldn't be in the news. So the reason it's in the news is because it's rare and we should be grateful for that. Anyway, we got more important things in terms of our guest this morning to get to. Now, his name is Mike Sharman. He is no stranger to the people on this show. And he's been a guest of ours many times. He's written another book before, which was called The Biggest Dick. And here he is. Here it's sorry, the best dick. I mean, you obviously have the biggest one as well.
Gareth, the best. Size doesn't matter, Gareth.
So, Mike Sharman, first of all, nice to see you, dude. I haven't seen you in a while. Are you good?
Strong man, how are you?
Yeah, very good. So, first and foremost, well done on a new book. And I'm sorry I didn't make your book launch. How did all of that go?
You were just swanning and living your best life up in Mexico, I believe. So,
I was.
Had more important things to do than attend a niche book launch.
Listen, you're a busy man. How the hell do you get to write a book, a second book, it's got to be added, while you're also running a business and you're dealing with like hundreds of clients and all kinds of things? How do you get this together?
I think I have undiagnosed adult ADHD, and I feel like there's a constant creative itch that needs to be scratched. And I think fortunately, where I am quite fortunate is from a retroviral perspective, you know, there's a really good structure in place. So there's an amazing MD, creative director, and the structures of the business of designers and account managers and finance. So a lot of the time I get to play at a very strategic kind of dreamer level. I get to play in that new business connected dots level. And for me, this book, I started writing it in 2019, and then a small thing of COVID got in the way. So push out the creative side hustle to actually focus on keeping the cash flow and revenue afloat. I think that was priority number one.
Well, Lebang is also in the advertising. She comes from the advertising and marketing world. And I look at what you guys do in that world. It's first of all, you kind of giving away a lot of your secrets in here, Mike. And I love that you're doing that, but you've let us into how you've built a business, how you've served so many of your clients and customers and brands. And I'm a bit worried that people are going to take this and actually copy and paste and start up their own businesses and steal work from you. Do you worry about that? Because you really give it all away. It's amazing.
You know, Gareth, I think there's so many nuances and network elements in connecting the dots when putting campaigns and coming up with ideas. I think that so many people have ideas, but they don't necessarily follow through with the execution. And I think that within this ecosystem of creativity, there's so many similar ideas in the ether at the same time, that it's the person who acts on the idea who comes out trumps. And I think the two examples that are used in the book, the work we did with My Creepy Teacher, the My Octopus Teacher spoof,
exactly.
and then most recently, which we don't cover in the book, but it happened incredibly quickly this year, was Tinder Swindler came out, and then we created a reactive 60-60 Swindler, where Checkers created on their 60-60 app missions for don't get swindled.
Yeah.
And then obviously we said to them, listen, your mission's doing so well. So many South Africans have seen this scam fest. Let's use Glenn, Beedham and Pam to make a Simon Levi of response video. And, you know, unlike Craig Foster, Glenn actually looks like Simon.
It's the
Israeli heritage, I believe.
All right. Well, let's just go into the name, which I love, Brandalism. And you talk about, I mean, the byline is building brands by vandalizing the status quo. Really, marketing and advertising and the whole idea of even PR has become a very, very different discussion to what it was maybe 20 years ago when you started in this business. You know, and then there were certain gatekeepers, there were certain formulas that were deployed, there were certain ways that you did things. And then someone like you comes along and you break the rules. And in the beginning, that doesn't go down so well. In the beginning, you're the pariah and you get into trouble and people go, well, we don't want to work with him. He's a shit stirrer. And maybe he gets attention, but that's not what we're looking for. We're looking for serious advertising. You know, we want a, what do they call it? A return on investment for this money we're spending here. And what they
probably hit your KPIs.
Right. And what they probably realize, look at LeBang smiling. She knows. And then what you realize somewhere along the way is actually, if you can get their attention in an attention economy, you've won. The rest isn't as important because there are a million people who are following the rules still to this day. Unfortunately, there's still way too many people who think they can get by on the marketing rules that were set in the 1960s by guys in like, you know, these huge agencies. But that's all changed. And if you don't hop on board this new bandwagon at some point, then unfortunately you'll go the way of Kodak and you'll go the way of Nokia, and you'll go the way of so many other businesses that people just don't care about anymore.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff to unpack in there, and I think that the concept around brandalism was an anti-advertising movement that was actually started by a host of artists, and it was something that ran in the UK side of things when those artists were looking at the billboards and the outdoor media that was telling women that they weren't good looking enough. So they had to have perfect skin and they had to use these certain cosmetics and they had to look at using products that were going to make them look better versions of themselves. And brandalism was effectively saying that, you know, this isn't right. That you, as your credible, authentic, true self, you are the person who matters. And that's where they started going out and vandalizing outdoor spaces. Also, when Scott Morrison came out and said, Australia, there's no such thing as climate change. Those fires are just natural acts of God. Mm-hmm. Then a whole bunch of Australian designers and advertisers went and vandalized bus stops and started putting up pictures of Blinky Bill and, I don't know, Crocodile Dundee escaping the fires and showing, oh, Scott Morrison, does climate change not really exist? Come on, Scotty.
Yeah, I mean,
so that's kind of
just if I can stop
the
you there.
Genesis of brand.
If I can stop you there, we're tired of being spun narratives by either politicians or branding companies, mm-hmm. and marketing businesses and huge corporations. I mean, we don't have to believe their nonsense anymore. There was a time where we didn't have an option because they were the only people who were able to speak on these things. So you mentioned just a second ago, like, for example, cosmetic companies and how the idea of what's beautiful has changed. So I'm just going to put this up and then I'm going to ask all three of you for some comments. And then obviously, Mike, you go last because based on your experience, I want to hear. This is the cover of Sports Illustrated right now. And that's the woman on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Her name is Yumi Nu. And people are saying, oh, this is so empowering. She's such a brave, courageous woman, so brave, and she's so fantastic. And this is what Sports Illustrated, which used to be, let's not kid around here, Sports Illustrated was basically as close to you to what you could get to a published piece of work with gorgeous women wearing as little clothing as possible. That was the whole point of Sports Illustrated. No one was reading it for the articles. I don't believe any of that was important. No one was going, oh, you know, what we need is more editorial integrity in the coverage that Sports Illustrated gives us. And we also weren't looking to them for being leaders in social commentary. They were just really a magazine that showed off a whole lot of very pretty girls, usually on a photo shoot in a beach somewhere, wearing skimpy outfits. But this is what Sports Illustrated is now. Is this a sign, Lebang, Bakabantu, and Mike, of evolution and of progress? Or is this a sign of, you know, kind of almost a backlash to years and years of us being sold what was the perfect woman. How do you guys interpret this? And then, Mike, you go last.
Already, I knew how you were going to feel about Gareth. But I think this is just, it could be a number of things, right? So the first thing is obviously from a branding perspective, brands want to stay current. They want to stay on trend. And what's the trend right now? It's inclusivity. It's everybody deserves a chance. Everybody needs to be seen, which I'm not mad at. You know, I'm not mad at the fact that a young girl who's a little bit overweight, you know, gets a chance to see her possible self in the future so that she can feel okay about herself. So I'm not mad at it from that perspective. From a business perspective, we all know what you guys are doing. You're literally just trying to be relevant. So we can talk about it like we're doing right now on the Gareth Cliff Show. So that's all that it is. Whether it's going in reverse because the girls that were on the cover before were all skinny and blonde, I don't think that's a thing. It is probably just a keeping up with the times thing, to just put it in one sentence. It's keeping up with the times. It's also just showing a variety of what beauty can be. Beauty shouldn't just be this one-sided coin. You know, that in itself is beautiful. It may not be for you, but it sure is for somebody else out there. That's what I think is going on Sports Illustrated in the year 2022.
What do you think?
I agree with Lebang. There is an element of overcorrecting by society in general. So Sports Illustrated is just pitching to that overcorrecting of society because that's what's trendy right now. I'm not for body positivity because I believe science says healthy is healthy and unhealthy is unhealthy. I'm kind of a cynic when it comes to that. I don't say I'm the healthiest person ever. I'm no Mulelo, but yeah, like, if you're pitching that as, like, there was no tagline, but I usually see these pictures of, let's say, plus size model, and they say, well, oh, no, we're healthy, and this is what you should strive for. I think in terms of your personal image, you should be comfortable with that. So a little kid growing up seeing that is empowering, but also the message should not be lost. That's not what you should strive for, in my opinion.
Okay.
I don't know.
What do you say, Shaman?
I think that it comes across as a little bit fake and forced. And I think that if you look at the stuff that brands such as Nike have done in the past, if you watch or you read Shoe Dog from Phil Knight, it's an incredible story. You know, Nike never jumped on trends because it was popular. Like, they were supporting Tiger before he even made it into the pro leagues. Phil Knight was walking green Tiger in NCAA golf tournaments. And then fast forward to the likes of, you know, Serena and the other current leaders within athletics, that Nike has continued to support them throughout. It's not supporting a Tiger or Serena because it's trendy now to do it. They've been with that talent since they were teens and, you know, even since the Williams sisters were young girls. So Phil has an exceptional talent to find that talent before it's broken into mainstream. And the converse of that, we looked at Gillette going from a very alpha male type positioning to then coming out with toxic masculinity messages, not all men, et cetera, et cetera. And it felt like they were jumping on a trend to capitalize on what society was talking about, as opposed to being credible and authentic to who they are. As a result, obviously Gillette's share price tanked because people just felt that they were almost topicality washing and putting on a message. And that's what, you know, Sports Illustrated could also be in the same position doing, as like, they're doing something because it is the right thing to do, as opposed to what Sports Illustrated believes should be selling and peddling at magazine stands.
So they're trying to go ahead, Lebang.
Yeah, but Mike, that's the problem now. Don't we live in a society where we can kind of see through all the bullshit? It's no longer just like, you know, we can just make it look pretty and people will just believe it. We have access to this information. We're more knowledgeable. We can see that this is what it is. So how do brands then find that balance? Because I'm struggling a bit with seeing these brands really, really try hard, and they're quite desperate to trend, to fit in, to seem cool, even at the expense of going against who they really are as a brand. So the core of who they are doesn't matter anymore, as long as they're number one on the trends. How should brands just try and find like a nice little, you know, balance between, look, we are still remaining who we are, but it's still important for us to fit in and to, you know, be seen by the cool youth or whatever the fuck they're trying to do. But, you know, it hurts me and it pains me to see these brands just bury themselves in these poor, poor taglines and poor campaigns that have nothing to do with who they are.
I think you made an interesting point there. And I think, you know, we speak from a very curious space. We speak from a little bit of constructive curiosity and criticism around what people are doing. But the average person out there doesn't interrogate, they don't question. So if you're a marketing manager or if you're a brand, you hear about influencers, you hear about celebrities. So we do all of Lillette South Africa's work, and one of their competitors, you know, they went and chose one of the largest celebrity women in South Africa to be the ambassador for their brand. And off the back of that, you know, it was great from a trending perspective. But if you look at the work that we've done with Lillette in particular, we've built a platform called Lillette's Talk, where young women women going through their first pregnancies, women going through menopause can log on and they can ask questions if they are uncertain. If you come from a rural part of South Africa and it's taboo to talk about those things, then you can ask a question which can be answered in Vernac. We don't have celebrities on the platform. We have responders who are gynies, pelvic floor specialists, et cetera, who are real people who are catered to answer those questions. So sure, the short-term hits and the trends of having a celebrity with millions of followers might like look good from a vanity metric or from a reach perspective, but to really build community, how now, are you incorporating experts that resonate?
I like that term vanity metric, because I think that's also a big part of what works and what doesn't. And I love what Lebang said here too, is like, we can see through this story. We can't see past this woman. She's enormous, but we can see through the story. And the story, and the story is, no. I'm not trying to make friends, and I don't want Sports Illustrated. And frankly, no one else does either. They haven't sold more than a tenth of the copies they would have sold 5 years ago, because sometimes when you go woke, you go broke, as given again by Mike in the example of Gillette. What I like about this story is Lebang, you made the point. It's like, we can see if you're trying to be authentic, but you're not. And this is because the people who decided on that Sports Illustrated cover, or the people who decided on Gillette's direction with regard to toxic masculinity, those are the same people who've been making marketing decisions for the last 30 or 40 years. They're not the Mike Sharmans. Exactly. They're not brandalists, right? And Mike, this is the point. It's like, you can't bullshit people anymore. And authenticity and credibility are in very short supply. And they're in massive, massive demand.
Gareth, what's interesting is that now this is the first time in history where businesses and brands are growing, exploding to number one status in their market, but then contracting and dying in the shortest period of time. Mm-hmm. So the average age of an S&P 500 company now in the US is just under 18 years old. Yeah. And if you think about 18-year-old businesses, Facebook's 18 now. So that's kind of like the limit of so many of these companies that have hit their peak. And then because they don't cannibalize their own self for the best progression opportunities, they end up dying. And, you know, as much as we tease Zuckerberg about being an android or lizard man or various other nicknames that he's captured along the years, you know, he used to notice, he would look at the trends that were happening and say, cool, desktop is going to be overshadowed by mobile. So then he started briefing internally to say, I only want to see presentations on mobile. I don't want to see death by PowerPoint anymore. And when people walked into those offices to present and brought their laptops out and opened them up, he would literally take them and throw them out the 20th floor of whatever building they were sitting on and say, I told you I want mobile presentations, mobile first, because if we stick to desktop, we're going to die. And, you know, you can give him a hard time and say that Facebook's stolen a whole bunch of features from Snapchat and TikTok and all these other competitors. But if you don't continue to destroy, reinvent, rebuild, you will become an inevitable death yourself.
Yeah. No, I love that. So, all right, let's just talk, because your book is full of funny anecdotes and you bring a lot of your own stories into it, which is one of the reasons I've enjoyed reading it. I think it's worth all of us and everybody who's listening to us and commenting at the moment, maybe recount just some of the dumbest things that you've seen in marketing over the last while, and some of the things that frustrate you the most when it comes to not only, you know, ordinary consumers, because we all can be very stupid and predictable in our behavior, but also like companies where they make the most obvious mistakes. And how you make a brand interesting, sexy, and as we said earlier, credible and authentic in a world where there's just so much nonsense.
The one example that pops to mind immediately around being silly is when Bic launched a pink pen. And they basically said, here we go, woman, you get to have your own pen. It's all pink and pretty now.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yep,
they did. Small hands, so now we've made a pink one.
They've actually done that. That was a real thing. That Mike's not making that up, Lebang, I promise. It's outrageous.
Somebody okayed that. There was a group of people that all approved it. And obviously, it just doesn't go to one person. There's multiple people that need to approve one campaign. Somebody said, yes, that is correct. We like it.
It's visionary.
It's visionary. It's the amount, like, I think the abuse of influencers. And I use influencers quite, you know, because truly, truly, are these people influencing us, yes or no? And I like the fact that you started, you're a co-founder of Webfluential, because you've probably seen this with your own two eyes, that, look, you can get that person with 5 million followers, but are they really even touching half of those people? Are they influencing them in any way? And I just had a conversation this past weekend at a braai. Oh, no, it was yesterday at the office with a certain brand that had clearly just picked maybe five names out of a hat and said, these are the ones we're going to go for. And the content that they came up with has absolutely nothing to do with the actual product. But hey, they got paid. They're going to keep it moving and they'll take the next campaign that lands in their lap. So that whole concept of influencer marketing is just getting so tired and so abused. And I cannot wait for what the next big thing is. And I think the person who knows what it is probably Mark Zuckerberg. That's it.
But you know what? I think that's such a great point around this contrived world of influencer. And for me, you know, I love the extremes. The influencer, Gareth knows our friend Hobbo, who we took on a Biogen journey where he went from 130 kilos, had never run 5 kilometers, when the competitors and supplement businesses were using these ripped oaks from Four Ways. Then there was Hobbo, and he went and he ended up completing half Ironman after 10 months of training and not getting juiced in his left bottom cheek. Yeah. You know, with testosterone to help him turn into a racehorse overnight. So you've got the influencer, where they don't feel like they hired guns to participate in a campaign. And then last year, you know, Checkers 6060 came out with this remake of the good old Mendoza classic for all the white viewers out there who love Mendoza at a wedding, you know. They had the, instead of 50-50, they had Let's Go 60-60, obviously because of the product. And the soundtrack was a retail campaign, right? So, you know, it's going to work on radio and it's going to work on TV. But I love bouncing ideas off comedians. And Don Goliath and I were doing some work on this project. And I said, Don, have you ever been in Cape Town as a new father? Have you ever run out of baby formula on a Sunday night in Cape Town? It is easier to find tuck in Sea Point than it is baby formula. And I said, Don, what other challenges do you have as a new dad? What are the things that your wife can relate to? So I said, how about this? Run out of nappies. My wife's not happy. Let's go 60-60. And that was Don's dream. And by bouncing those ideas off each other, Don got to create an entertaining piece of branded content. And I think that's the key takeout for brands and organizations, is that people are watching more Netflix. They're streaming more content. They're being entertained in new ways more than ever. We don't want an ad to interrupt us. We want an ad to entertain us.
All right, but,
and that's when you know you've done a great job.
But Mike, let's also be very honest about this. The fact is that most corporates who have a marketing budget are cowardly as hell, and they want to do whatever it is that creates the least noise and gives them the least negative attention. They would rather do without attention. They would rather forego marketing in some cases than get into trouble for the wrong kind of marketing. And that is a difficult thing to navigate as someone in your business.
It really is, you know, and I think that's where we're fortunate. You know, we've positioned ourselves as the challenger brand for challenger brands. And generally, we don't win work through pitches. If we end up pitching, we are almost always the outliers. We're there as, oh, what are the quirky kids going to offer us in this one? And we're not always there for a real shot. No. If people want to work with us, generally, they've heard me speak at a conference or followed me on Twitter. Someone sends me a message and says, hey, I've been following you on Twitter for a while and I don't have to apologize. Then you know it's a good business opportunity.
So also being able to say no, right? And you've got to have the right mix. If someone who's selling washing powder comes to you and they go, ah, we're really keen to make our washing powder very sexy and attractive, but you just aren't excited by washing powder, you have to be able to say no.
Exactly. And that's the hard part. It's like in the entrepreneurial space, you're just constantly chasing wins. Mm. And it's important to define what you stand for and what you stand against. And I think too few situations, people actually stand up for what they don't want to work on and to walk away. And there are a couple examples in the Brandalism book. Like, we fired a client once and they took it very personally. They tried to sue us. I said, why are you suing me for what?
I love it. Oh, man. All right. So just to recap for people who haven't already heard about the book, it's called Brandalism. You can see the cover if you're watching us on YouTube this morning. If you're listening to the podcast, it is Mike Sharman's latest book. And it's absolutely fascinating from the point of view of kind of getting a grip on how marketing and advertising has changed and where it's going, and also the kinds of stories you get to tell. And that's an important part of this too, right, Mike, is that people want to hear stories. They don't want to be sold a bullshit product line. They don't want to be, you know, those ads that used to exist where like one out of every two doctors recommends that you should smoke Camel, because we know how well those worked out. And people can see through it because they now have the power of this. And I mean, it also begs saying that a lot of consumers are not very curious. You kind of indicated this earlier. A lot of people actually don't interrogate this stuff, and they will just buy a lot of really dumb marketing messages, even in the 21st century, where they could look it up and find out for themselves if it's true or not. So how do you walk that tightrope?
Well, I think that's the challenge, right, is that we spoke about curiosity earlier, but we as human beings, we are force-fed what algorithms of social media want us to know. Mm. That's why the world has become so polarizing, because it's easy to keep us in our boxes and keep us buying into our own subconscious or conscious biases, and to keep us buying the products and the same washing powder we have for decades. Mm. And I think the challenge with the work that we do is to create the premise and insights that enough people from a mainstream perspective can tap into and they can nod their heads along to and they can connect with. But then you need to take that emotional connection that you've had with people from a storytelling perspective and then emotionally connect them to a rational purchasing decision. And that's the challenge that we are faced with on an ongoing basis in our world. The emotion into the rational, with a world of a lot of irrational people.
I know Lebang's got lots of questions, so
it's not even a question. I'm just getting flashbacks of this one term that always comes up when there's a new brief. We need to win the hearts and minds of South Africa every single fucking time. I kid you not. I think that's been the most consistent thing in advertising for the past 20 years. Like, so how are we going to go about this? Like, we need to try to win the hearts and minds of every single South African.
I love the way that, Lebang, it's the people who ask that question in a meeting are usually people who can't even win the hearts and minds of their own spouse, let alone, you know.
Dude.
They want to win everybody's hearts and minds. They clearly don't understand how people think.
Yeah, no, not at all. I'm quite keen to read the book, and it should be interesting.
Well, thanks. Let me know what you think. But yeah, I think that's ultimately the problem, right? Is like marketers just box everyone into demographics. They don't consider the psychographics. They don't consider the nuances. You then have the pan-African brands that say, we need to take this brand across Africa. And you're like, yes, but which part? There's so many nuances. There's so many cultures. There's so many backgrounds. You know, we've done stuff. We've shot content in Ghana. And my business partner, Ben, who Gareth knows well, you know, Ben wrote these scripts, and then we had to work with some local copywriters to ensure that the pidgin English was correct, because Ghanaian pidgin English is very different from Nigerian pidgin English. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, too few marketers actually bother to get into the actual market or get onto the ground. There's a lot of ego, and I think that's generally the problem. People aren't going to humble themselves and say, I don't know pidgin English. Yeah. And that's generally when the problems arise, because you can land in Accra and you see all these South African brands. You see the FNB, the MTNs, et cetera, et cetera. But then you try and read the billboard, and then your brain kind of is constantly trying to interpret what it's saying, because it's just not the English that you know. And I think that's the time, if you're not willing to ask those around you. And we've got such a tree of trust set up in our agency. We've got an office WhatsApp group. If there's any ideas that are cracking or breaking or trending, like if there's trending topics that are in vernac that I don't understand, I'm like, yo, educate this white boy. What is this all about? Why is Black Twitter going nuts for this comment? And then the
Google
same
Translate is the enemy.
Yeah, absolutely.
The same thing is
stay away.
Ideas. If I'm worried that like the creepy teacher is too nuanced and too niche and too white Cape Town, like saying to the team, guys, am I coming across as the old white dad here? Like, am I missing the mark, or is this something that people can find funny across gender, race, etc., etc.? And by creating that opportunity in that collaborative space, people in my office, whether they are interns or peers, you know, they can stand up and say, no, listen, dude, you missed the marker. This is like way too white dad comedy. It's not going to be found funny by cool black guys in Soweto. And then on the flip side of that, listen, I'm a cool young black dude and I think this idea is banging, so let's give it a crack. And I think by having those conversations, we don't generally allow ourselves to be humbled like that enough. And yeah. that's where problems like Tresemme hair scandal happened, and then people once again they default to thinking, oh, this must have been an old white marketer that put this on the shelves. Turns out it was a black guy that you know, rubber stamped it. But ultimately, once again, a black guy also is not in touch with black women hair all the time, so you can't make these assumptions based on what you know, what you think you know, because so many times you can find yourself in a position where you've absolutely missed the mark and the next result is being dragged on social, or worse, in the real life, as your stores get violated and destroyed.
Yeah, I suppose the interesting kind of golden thread in all of this is that you can't actually get into someone else's head unless you ask them questions. And we've got to stop assuming a whole lot of shit about each other. And this goes all the way back to the first conversation we were having this morning at like 6 o'clock, when it comes to, you know, what movies you've watched and what your life experience has been and what you think about things. Most people are just not even asking those questions, which is why I like this book of Mike's. It's really terrific. Well done, dude. And I'm glad you also got to upgrade your foreword to Bruce Whitfield. Much better than the one I wrote for you in the previous book.
I also learned how to spell forward this time. That also helped.
But it's nice to see you, and congratulations on another terrific book. I hope we keep asking questions of each other, keep finding out what people really think and how they really feel about things, because a lot of us just kind of go along with stuff, and especially in marketing, it's easy to just do what's been done a million times before and not get into trouble. And people like you get out there and you get into trouble. You're willing to do that. And most of the time, you end up with a much, much better rate of return and a much higher level of interest than those people who are just ticking the boxes. So it's really important that we've got people like Mike out there breaking the rules and brandalizing things. I love it. Well done, dude.
Thanks, G. Thanks to your host as well. Lovely to meet you guys. And thanks for the chat and the debate.
I'm going to take this for Lebang. All right. She's going to read it next.
Let me know what you think. Hit me up on the socials.
Awesome stuff. Thanks, Shaman. Cheers, everybody. Dude. All right. Well, there we go. Bakabantu, Lebang, we will see you on Tuesday next week. I'll see you on Thursday with Pumi, Bakabantu. And otherwise, have an excellent Tuesday, everybody. We will catch up a little
Peace
bit.
Peace out. Cheers. Cliffcentral.com.